You're listening to Arrivé by the Cycling Podcast. This episode is made possible by Bicycle, the leading global marketplace for pre-owned bikes.
Hello and welcome to this Arrivé episode from the Cycling Podcast Féminin. My name is Rose Manley and today we're going to be talking about the Paris-Roubaix Femme, which has just finished. I'm just catching my breath. So much to talk about. And I should say now, if you don't know what happened in the race, if you don't want to know what happened in the race, then go and find out what happened in the race or go and watch it and come back to us because this is going to be full of spoilers. We're going to go through the who, what's, where's, when's, how's, all of it. And thankfully, because as you can probably tell, I'm still a bit breathless from that finale, which was so crazy, that I'm joined by, well, someone who's a professional talker, I guess, Rebecca Charlton, aren't you? Thankfully, I've got someone who does it talking for a living.
I don't think this is going to surprise you, Rose, but I know it'll get a reaction. I shed a little bit of a tear at the finale today.
Oh, you didn't.
I genuinely did. I'm so emotional these days. I don't know what's happened to me. But just as they came into the velodrome and just watching the finale play out, I really was tearing up. I know you never believe that I am, but I was.
Well, I just thought, well, no, it was a crazy thrill of a finale, but it was, how did you even have time to cry? Because it was so crazy that, you know, you should have put a pause on all the crying until after that finish, because it did go down to the velodrome, and we have been so spoiled, haven't we, to have had four editions of the Paris-Roubaix Femme, and yet they all are so different, such different winners and the style of winning. We've been really spoiled in that respect, and this was another different way of winning and another magnificent champion.
It really was. And I think that it is easy to roll out these cliches of unpredictability. But I do think, obviously, this is still a very young race. We're still very excited to even have it on the calendar. But those scenarios have been so, so different. And we haven't been able to really, especially after Alison Jackson's surprise win last year, we've not been able to really say, OK, here's anything formulaic that might happen. It's been completely, completely down to fortune on the day, people having, you know, mechanicals, bad luck, crashes, who's staying out of trouble. That's a massive factor. And I think also just the absolute fatigue of riders as well. It just throws every rule out the window. And I think that's what makes it such explosive racing.
And it was so exciting today. And we had the crosswinds as well today. We had, you know, strong winds blowing, which also made it so much more difficult, so much more fatiguing. But I will, before we go any further, actually try and give a little précis of what happened and try and do it as quickly as possible. There was an early break before the television pitches started, and that was from Victoire Jean-Charest of the Grandes team. She got 2 minutes lead, in fact, but we didn't kind of get to see any of it before the TV pitches started. When they did start, we saw that Lidl Trek and DSM Firmenich were there in numbers at the front on all the early cobble sections. Then 61k to go. This is a moment that I just know Becca would have enjoyed so much. And that was when Capecchi signalled for the race car and then went back to her team car and proceeded to adjust her own handlebars, just fixing her own mechanical midway through the race. And then powered back on to be third wheel on the next cobble sections. Incredible, especially bearing in mind what was to come. And on that sector 12, where we first saw the first kind of big group of contenders was established there. And that was a quartet, a really strong quartet of Lotta Kopecky, Marianne Vos, Pfeiffer Georgi and Karina Schweinberger going away on Orchi Les Orchi. That was brought back by Ellen van Dijk. And I'm going to be ending up saying attacked by Ellen van Dijk. Brought back by Ellen van Dijk a lot today. It's littered all over the pages of my notes. We then had an attack, a solo break by Jade Veal of FDJ Suez. She attacked on the Templeuve, built up 25 seconds on the chasers, but was ultimately caught on sector 6. But her teammate Amber Crack countered almost immediately with Ellen van Dijk for company. The duo pulled out a gap, but on sector 5, an acceleration from Lotta Kopecky created a splinter group of chasers along with Elisa Balsamo and Marianne Vos. They caught the front pair to make it 5, with Pfeiffer Georgi following behind. Balsamo was dropped on the Carrefour de l'Arbre, and while the remaining four battled it out the front, Georgie and Balsamo made it back on to create the final six of Ellen van Dijk, Marianne Vos, Elisa Balsamo, Lotte Kopecky, Amber Crack and Pfeiffer Georgie. They kept the chasers at bay, and on the velodrome, Ellen van Dijk led it out. Pfeiffer Georgie made an early sprint, forcing Vos and Balsamo to start their accelerations. Coming into the line, Kopecky went around the outside to take the win, and amazingly, in that fantastic world champion skin suit, that looked immaculate, didn't it? It was still bright white and shining, even after all that dust and dirt and cobbles and everything.
It was remarkably clean. It actually,
is that why you were crying, Becca? Because you were just so in... I know you love a bit of cycling kit, a bit of cycling clothing. You're in awe of that more than anything else.
You love having some me up in all these anecdotes. And your love that she got a multi-tool out. But I did. It's true. I would like to just give a minute to talk about that in a minute. I had to really hold myself back from jumping in that, summary of the race, because I do think that was amazing. But I love that she's gone for the white shorts and she's just gone for the whole white thing, you know, in those conditions that we've had recently. It's brave and I love it. That finale, I would just like to go back to, and I don't know why I'm doing this, because actually it makes you look amazing and highlights.
No, carry on, Becca. I want to hear it.
My observation not being quite spot on. I think we reshared this on Instagram, this particular quote from me, just a few days ago, where I said, I wonder if Lotte Kopecky has lost her sharp edge in a sprint.
Yes.
No, she has not.
We did say that. That was taken from our last podcast that we did, one of the monthly podcasts. And we were saying that, you know, she's putting so much effort into the climbing and kind of changing her game slightly, and maybe she's lost it in the sprint. But, you know, it did show a great patience, because she has lost this year to Balsamo and she's lost to Vos. So she would have been thinking, coming into that finale, she wouldn't necessarily have been, I mean, she clearly did back herself, but she wouldn't necessarily have been totally confident that she could outsprint those people, when actually last year she probably would have thought, oh yeah, I've got the better of Vos and Balsamo here quite easily. So she really did take her time, and you know track racing better than anyone, Becca, and Lotte Kopecky is a phenomenal track rider. I know we were kind of building up how good Marianne Vos is at sprinting, but she hasn't been on the track for a long time. There is a technique there, and there is a lot of it is also being patient, because when you saw Vos and Balsamo go just on that kind of before the last bend, you kind of thought that they had it wrapped up, didn't you? Well, I did. I'm saying me.
Yeah, well, I thank you, Rose. I did think that. I really did think that. And I thought that it was absolutely the case that if the two riders of Vos and Balsamo could get there, if they could, you know, because obviously at points we saw Balsamo lose contact and she looked so fatigued, didn't she? Mm. And I know there were problems for riders that we perhaps again didn't see on cameras, like crashes and mechanicals, but at that point to me, Balsamo looked very fatigued. Vos looked really, really comfortable to me all day, actually. I thought, especially for the case of Balsamo, if she can keep contact, if she comes into that velodrome, it's got to be hers, or at least down to her and Vos in that group. And actually, to see Kopecky yet time that so well, it shouldn't be a surprise, as you say, in terms of her track craft and it being the finale in the velodrome. But I didn't call that. I didn't call her coming from that position the long way round and actually just dominating and making it ultimately look easy when she crossed that line. She just came in so, so strong, didn't she? And I would not have expected those two to lose out to her in that scenario. But actually, the track craft really had it. She timed it perfectly. There was a lot of wind today and they did go early. And I think for me, you know, I did race track many, many, many years ago. And I was always someone that just tried to hang on, and then go and use that final straight. And actually...
So she did a Rebecca Charlton, is that what we're saying?
And I'm thinking, you know, that I'm going in the direction I'm comparing myself to Lotte Kopecky. I just want to caveat, that is not where I'm going with this. There is no comparison to be drawn between me and Kopecky. But I sometimes think, gosh, has someone gone a bit early? And I'm usually wrong on the road. Actually, when we've seen Vos go for that really long sprint, quite often she seals the victory, doesn't she? She does put it off, even though she's gone very early. But today it didn't work, and Kopecky just timed it right.
But Capecchi's such a worthy champion, and it's so nice to see that a world champion jersey come across, and she's such a worthy champion of this race. And what I think is remarkable also is that she is, you know, not being quiet about the fact that this is her goal for the year, pretty much, to win this race. And it's such a big deal to have a goal in a race that is so impossible to predict for all the reasons I've kind of already mentioned. So it's kind of crazy for her to be so consistent also at the race. I mean, she obviously won the sprint for the best of the rest last year because of that Alison Jackson break group kind of taking up all the podium places. She, you know, outsprinted everyone else this time round, but it's just such a remarkable feat. And she's such a, you know, we do get a bit bored of SD Works winning, or they haven't had it all their way this season. But I think that what they've shown also is they really... I thought they'd kind of blown it a bit earlier on because they really didn't have the numbers in that kind of big chase group. I mean, there were lots of other teams that had numerous riders. Like there was a chase group where there was kind of four FTJ riders and three Canyon SRAM riders, three Jumbo Visma Lisa bike riders, three AG Insurance riders, four Fenix De Koenig riders, three Little Trek. And there was only two SD Works riders, but they were totally the exact right riders to be there, and that was Lotta Capecchi and Lorena Vibus, because, you know, Lotta Capecchi, you know, she's so strong on the cobbles and strong in the sprint, so she kind of could have won either way, couldn't she? But because she had Lorena Vibus just behind in the group that was kind of only 20 seconds back, she was kind of getting a little bit of a bye on kind of taking turns at the front sometimes, because it's kind of like, well, if this chase group comes back, Lorena Vibus is going to wipe the floor with everyone. So kind of SD Works was so canny with who was in which position at what time. And it's kind of like a big lesson for the other teams, isn't it? That you don't need to have all the numbers, you just need to have the right riders.
Yeah, it's so, so true. I think that it would be easy to say, well, Capecchi, big favourite, world champion, coming in strong. Yeah, of course she was going to get it. But actually, I think everything you've just highlighted there makes her victory all the more impressive. I noticed things throughout the entirety of the race that I thought that was not easy to overcome or to come back from or to keep a cool head with. And she just kept, well, she ultimately did keep that cool. And I think, yeah, she really, really impressed me today. And one of the things was that observation on strength in numbers. What we've seen before is you could say, yeah, well, and we have seen before, they've got so many cards to play that it's just ping another rider off. Okay, if that doesn't work, doesn't matter, got someone else. But they didn't have that necessarily today. And I think that it was down to just playing it really, really well. But also that element of knowing that it's your target. And we know that she can keep... she can keep really good focus when she's going for the biggest targets ever. We know that. But it doesn't mean that it's easy. And I think when she had to adjust her bars, yeah, her head had slipped down probably significantly enough for her to really need to obviously address that. And she did adjust them on the go. And that is impressive. It really is. But I think even more impressive than her mechanical skills is the fact that she did not flap. And yeah, she did obviously signal like, come on, I need some mechanic assistance now. I need the old Allen key to come out. But she just efficiently did it, rode herself back in. And I think we saw other riders have difficulties. And then you could just see how much it had sapped them to get back on. But she went back on. She had a couple of times she had to go back to the car. And then she ultimately sealed the victory at the end of the day. So I think there were so many reasons, actually, that she could have lost it today. And she didn't.
Yeah, absolutely. And also... because she does get in, she does get a bit frustrated. She's quite kind of, you know, even in the after the race interviews, in the post-race interviews, she's kind of always seems so calm. But actually when she's on the bike, she kind of does flap her arms about a lot and gestures to people and kind of yells over to other riders. And I did think actually when she was adjusting her handlebars and she was flapping her arms and getting a bit frustrated, that she was starting a little bit to lose her cool there. Because I'm kind of seen at Omloop, I remember, when she was kind of getting frustrated at Marianne Vos and the Little Trek duo there, that they weren't that they weren't maybe jumping on every attack and letting attacks go. And she was getting into a right flap, and then she was kind of wasting a lot of energy in this kind of aggressive energy that she was kind of losing her chance. So I was kind of worried at that point that maybe she wouldn't have it, but she pulled it off in magnificent style. But what did you think, Becca, when it was that kind of six was established and they were coming into the velodrome? How did you read it? How did you think it was going to go at that point? Because Little Trek obviously had two riders in that group, but not necessarily by that point. Like you mentioned a bit earlier, Balsamo was looking a bit tired, and you know she had fallen back on one of the earlier cobbled sections and had to be brought back kind of by Pfeiffer Georgie. How did you see that read that the race was going to play out at that point?
Even though we'd seen that fatigue in her, and we had seen Pfeiffer pulling her back onto that group, because ultimately she lost contact, as you say. Despite that, when it came to the velodrome, looking at her stance and her position and just her body language, I just thought she had it. I really thought she had it, because of how, you know, well the team had done in positioning her as well. And I know there's other riders that we need to talk about within that group that came to the finale, but I really, really at that point would have called it that she was going to comfortably take that.
I was backing Voss. I think I was backing Voss, but I always back Voss, I think maybe more with my heart than my head. But I just thought that, you know, what a fantastic victory that would be. But, you know, Lotta Kopecky also a fantastic victory.
You're listening to Arrivé by The Cycling Podcast. This episode is made possible by Bicycle, the leading global marketplace for pre-owned bikes.
Our Arrivé series this spring is brought to you by Bicycle. Have a look at the website, which is bicycle.com, or download the Bicycle app onto your phone if you prefer. And perhaps you'll end up doing what I've been doing this week, which is disappearing down various rabbit warrens, browsing through all the bikes for sale on Bicycle. There's more than 15,000 available bikes. And, well, let's start with a little quiz, shall we? Can you name the bike brands that the last three winners of the men's and women's Paris-Roubaix have ridden to victory? I'll give you a clue. The last three men's winners were Matthew van der Poel, Dylan van Baarle and Sonny Colbrelli. And the women's winners were Alison Jackson last year, and to make it a little easier, Lizzie Deignan and Elisa Longo-Borghini before that were both riding the same bike brand. I'm sure this quiz is far too easy for our listeners. You'll know immediately which bikes were ridden to victory in Paris-Roubaix. But the point I'm trying to make is that Bicycle has got every bike brand you can think of available. You can browse through, you can find something that suits your needs, suits your wallet. And with the Bicycle app and website, buying and selling a bike has never been easier. And it's never been more secure either, because there are protections in place for both buyer and seller. Now, don't just take my word for it. Have a look at the reviews on Trustpilot and you'll be really reassured that the system works brilliantly. So if you're in the market for a bike, Bicycle is the place to go. Now, before I hand back to put you out of your misery, the bikes that have been ridden to glory in the most recent editions of Paris-Roubaix are Matthew van der Poel on a Canyon, Dylan van Baarle on a Pinarello, Sonny Colbrelli on a Merida, of course, and in the women's race, Alison Jackson was on a Cannondale, and Lizzie Deignan and Elisa Longo-Borghini were both on Trex. While you're waiting for the men's race to hot up tomorrow, why not have a look at bicycle.com? Who knows, you might not even know you're in the market for a bike until you've had a look. Or maybe you're thinking of selling a bike. Bicycle is the place to do it.
Well, we've spoken a lot about Lotta Kopecky, the champion at Paris-Roubaix. But really, for me, the rider of the day was Ellen van Dijk. And although, you know, she came away from it, you know, Balsamo missed out on the win. She came second, and Ellen van Dijk herself finished sixth. For me, it was such a show of strength, and she was really playing a team role there. But I did really think that at some points that she was going to get away and win it.
Yeah, there was a definite point for me that I thought, okay, you can see where this is going. She's obviously working now to align Balsamo for the finale, but she was so strong. And I think this is something you and I talked about on the last podcast episode, and we talked about a lot, is just how pivotal she is to that team. And for anyone that doesn't know, she was having a little bit of time off having her child, just 6 or 7 months ago, which I have to keep checking with you, don't I? How long
yes.
ago it was. I just can't get my head around not only her being able to come back and perform that strength team role that we know she does so well, and the amount of dragging she did on the front. I mean, she just made the race today. She was just driving, driving, driving. But then when she laid back and started those attacks, rather than just driving the front, I thought she could win this today. And having had a baby a few months ago, I mean, that is staggering in itself, but it just proves the rider she is. And she's just come back immaculately to the peloton. But not only is her riding so on point, yeah, fitness and strength, but the way she animates. And she, for me, she was just such a standout rider today. Whatever the result and whatever those standings say at the end of it, she, for me, was a standout rider.
She was. And I think she kind of decided the race, really. And because I really thought on that Sector 12, when Lotta Kopecky, Mariana Vos, Pfeiffer Giorgi and Karina Schreinberger went away, you know, they kind of quickly got 10 seconds on a cobbled sector. And I thought, right, that might be the race made even at this point, because, you know, they are such a strong four, as we went on to see, with three of them also playing a big part in the final. But it was all because of Ellen van Dijk that they were brought back and that group swelled. Because, you know, I think if there had been a little Trek rider in that group at that point, then that would have gone on to the finish even quite early on in terms of the cobbled sectors. But it was all down to Ellen van Dijk. So she kind of decided that was going to go. And then she was so instrumental in that kind of final six move going away. And then also in kind of directing when Balsamo dropped off her teammate, and they kind of lost that sprint card effectively by losing Balsamo. She was the one that was then dictating to kind of sit up a bit more and, you know, let Vos and Kopecky go at it. So she was so decisive to not only how well Little Trek did, but how the race played out.
Completely. And I feel like there were so many nuances today and so many talking points. And thank you for bringing me back to that one, because I think that's when we spoke before we came onto the pod. One of my first observations that I think we both were in agreement on was that first group to really go with Vos and Giorgi and Dirk Kopecky in it. I thought that really could be it for the day. And I, at that point, thought, oh my goodness, there's no Little Trek there. They are going to be massively losing out without being in that group, because I think it could go and that could be day done. But it was Ellen van Dijk that ultimately made sure that didn't happen, and that was mightily impressive. But yeah, I really thought that was a dangerous group. And I know we've talked a lot about Kopecky, but just seeing her style in that she just started putting the pressure on, and before you know it, snap, it's gone behind and there's already a group. And yeah, notably not Little Trek in it. But that was, for me, yeah, a massive point of the day, was that it was down to van Dijk to make sure that they did come back.
And we should also mention the other ride of the day, and that was Pfeiffer Giorgi, who was just finished third. And, you know, it was great actually seeing the kind of live footage of her finding out that she finished on the podium, because it was really close between her and Mariana Vos. And, you know, when the camera first went to her and she looked a little bit crestfallen, I was kind of like a bit surprised, because it's a big deal to get a podium at Paris-Roubaix. Whatever calibre of rider you are, it's a really big deal. But then to see her realising, finding out, and then huge smile and kind of in disbelief and you know, almost in tears. Well, you probably couldn't even see it through your tears, Becca, that reaction from Pfeiffer Giorgi. But it was just so fantastic to see someone so thrilled to be on that podium. But it was so deserved. And looking back at the race, that what she went through to get that third place against that caliber of riders, like, she, I mean, for me, I think she might have even had the strongest legs of the day. Like, forget Ellen van Dijk, you know, with putting in huge, huge attacks, multiple attacks, and pulling the peloton along. Forget kind of Lotta Kopecky also looking so strong on the cobbles and then coming along and winning it. Pfeiffer Giorgi had so many setbacks, and yet she still managed to get podium against people, riders who are, you know, much stronger sprinters than her on paper.
I too went through the same, wait, say emotions. I was watching live, of course, on the TV coverage, and I thought exactly the same thing. I thought she doesn't look happy. And I honestly thought at this point that she knew that she was on the podium. And yeah, I thought, why doesn't she look happy? Maybe she had bigger expectations. And then that moment for me was so joyous when she's like, oh, what? Oh my goodness. Because she obviously just didn't think. She just didn't believe that she'd got third. And just watching that moment live was just delightful, because her face is absolutely lit up. And you could see in that moment what it meant to her. And I think that's quite interesting to me as well. So as you say, it's a really big deal being on the podium of Roubaix. Of course it is. But I sometimes feel like a rider like Fire for Georgie is so focused on a victory for herself or for the team that she would come away saying, oh, well, you know, it's not a win. But actually to see what that meant to be on the podium was a really nice thing, I think, because she should have so much confidence in herself as a rider, but I think sometimes she is incredibly modest, and you could see in that moment really that she was almost in disbelief that she'd done that. And I think we all believe it for her, don't we? But I think another observation I made was the way the team worked with DSM Firmenich when they actually did a full-on lead out to make sure she was well positioned on the sectors of Parbe, like the really pivotal ones. You'll have noticed that they were like treating that full on, we've got to lead her into this. And it's so important with so many people running into problems, difficulties, mechanicals, that you're at the head of the action. And I think we talked about Kopecky having to go back and then ride herself back up and assert. That's not easy. And we saw Pfeiffer do that coming back from I think her and her teammate Franzi Koch, and they touched wheels. I don't know exactly what happened, but it really did cost them a bit of time there. And then Pfeiffer Georgie, I blinked right back at the pointy end again, right in front of the TV cameras. And I just thought, that's quite energy sapping in a race like this. And to have got herself back up there, obviously then coming back with Balsamo. And I think in her post-race interview, she was talking about the fact that she wanted that podium so badly that all the fatigue, all the pain, it just gets parked in that moment, doesn't it? She was like, I've got an opportunity now. I've come in this position into the Velodrome. I'm not letting this go. And to come in ahead of Boss was amazing.
No, it was such a, you mentioned that kind of coming together with a teammate, Franzi Koch, and that was a really pivotal moment, because that was just before Sector 5, which was the crucial sector where that kind of splinter group from the chasers of Vos, Kopecky and Balsamo went away. So that happened just before. So she put in a load of effort to get back before the cobbled sector. But then obviously that had taken a toll, and she couldn't keep the wheel then of that group going off. But she, that, you know, I think other riders, their heads would have dropped at that point. But she didn't. She persevered, she carried on, and then she was kind of lucky in a way that on the next cobbled sector, Balsamo was dropped slightly, and it was kind of that carrot type kind of dangling in front of her that she could get up to Balsamo, and if she got up to Balsamo, she could then get up to the group in front. But she must have exerted a huge amount of effort, because we did see her getting very frustrated at Balsamo, because Balsamo wasn't taking a turn. Obviously, Balsamo's teammate Ellen van Dijk was ahead, so she wouldn't really necessarily have to, although, you know, it did seem that Little Trek at that point were kind of relying on Balsamo coming back to kind of beat the faster finishers there. But Pfeiffer Georgie had to put so much effort into that. So, you know, it is... so heartening to see, and also just makes you think that she had such strong legs that day, and, you know, was so determined and motivated. And in the Velodrome, it was, I think, when she kind of went quite early, you know, you were kind of thinking, oh, what are you doing? But then also Pfeiffer Georgie against that kind of caliber of sprinters, that she'd have to do that. And so it's so nice to see that she was rewarded for that with the third place. And as you said, Becca, you know, DSM Firmenich did so much work on those cobbled sectors. They were right at the front the whole time. They were keeping her up there. And she was in all of the moves that matter. Pfeiffer Georgie was there. So it was so nice to see her rewarded for that. And also, you know, she is only 23. which is crazy to think because she was such a prolific junior rider. And she's already kind of gotten to this position in the team where she's the road captain and she's kind of given instruction on the road. She's like the head lead out person for Charlotte Kull. So she kind of has a lot of responsibilities, team responsibilities. So it was nice to see her given the chance to do what she wanted and race the race that she wanted, and be the leader of the team today.
It was, and she is a very young rider with a lot more responsibility than you perhaps expect, but it is just a sign of the rider she is and her personality as well, and the way that she does, she just keeps believing, doesn't she? Like, that was the prime example, as you say, today. But I also think it's a very exciting sign of more and more to come from her, because we've already seen so much, as you say, not only as an individual rider, but how pivotal she's been to Charlotte Kull, and obviously the team's history of having such a superb lead out has been, you know, great, great part down to why for Georgie. So I think she's obviously earned this position of captain in the team at such a young age. It's absolutely amazing. But as I say, in terms of what it tells us about her future, she was so, I mean, she must have just been so shattered coming back from those setbacks today. But she didn't just come back. She had those legs at the end. And just think if she hadn't had to burn all those matches and she hadn't sapped that much energy, like, what else would we have seen? Could she have been even stronger at the end? So I think that's just amazing. And I was glad to see how happy she was.
Yeah, and it's great to see this kind of new generation of ride. I mean, it's hard to say new generation, but a Fight for Georgie was so huge on the junior racing scene. And obviously on the women's side compared to the men's side, there isn't that under 23 step. So it takes a little bit longer for those champions in the junior races to then become champions in the elite races. But she also used to ride against, remember, Jade Veal was actually one of her kind of great rivals. So it was amazing also to see Jade Veal of FDJ Suez make the solo break. And that was really pivotal for the race as well. I think people were maybe not underestimating her a little bit, but they gave her quite a big gap and didn't look like they were chasing her back immediately. Or at least they were kind of perhaps waiting for Ellen van Dijk to do the chasing, or Visma Lisa Bike to do the chasing, which they duly did. But a great performance from FDJ Suez, because, you know, to have Jade Veal go and really actually keep a strong gap at reasonably the final stages of the race, and then to immediately counterattack with Amber Crack, who is not a young rider, but is a young rider in terms of racing years, because, you know, she was a rower and she's come to it a bit late. And she had a real breakthrough performance, I think, today, because I think you wouldn't have put her in that, the caliber of riders that she was riding against in that final group.
I agree. I agree with all of the above. But I thought, I do think that Veal was probably underestimated in that she was let go a little bit off the leash. But I also think that you can't let anyone go in Roubaix, because as we've seen before, it's not formulaic. You don't always see people or groups brought back. And that's the thing. I don't think you can say on that terrain with that nature of racing, oh, it's okay, just we'll let that rider go. And as a team, they were superb. And another side of things come. Yeah, and I think for Crack, like, we didn't necessarily expect her to be in that group.
Yeah, she also, I think they've kind of, FDJ Suez, a kind of, not to say benefiting from Cecily Ludwig's misfortune, obviously she's out injured, but I think that they're so much a kind of, can be so much a one-rider team, or at least, you know, two-rider team, so they're always looking at Grace Brown as well, but they really had to come up with a new sort of strategy today. Also, Grace Brown was hit by a mechanical, so she was kind of out of it reasonably early. So they had to come up with a different strategy, and they still got the numbers up there and were so attacking, and then put a lot of faith in Amber Crack, who, she doesn't have a huge palmarès, but I mean, she did get a win at the UAE Tour just this year, where again, it was kind of a breakaway. She attacked from the breakaway and managed to keep away just by the tiniest of margins from a kind of sprinting pack behind. So she showed a lot of skill in kind of being able to solo, being able to time trial, and being able to keep the very best away. So yeah, she has a really promising future as well. Was there anyone else that caught your eye, Becca, on out at Paris-Roubaix today?
I would say if I had to pick one person that really stood out for me, just looking at that finale, it was Zoë Backstead, because I saw the look on her face when she lost some ground and she actually lost contact with the group she was with. And she just looked like she was just peak suffering at that point. It looked like she just snapped. And then when the cameras cut back to the scenes in the velodrome, she was back there, like sprinting with that group. And I thought that was really impressive. And again, like, it's such a young rider that a lot of people will be talking about today because of her family history, because of her father, Magnus Backstead, winning the race. And it's a huge, I mean, it must be a huge dream of her, not only to be there, but to one day win it. So I think there'll be a lot of tongues wagging, like, oh, what's she going to do? What's she going to do? And she has to deal with that pressure. And I think she does deal with it very, very well. But that was, you know, really standout performance for me to see her look absolutely blown at one point and then just that tenacity to get back into where she was in that finale.
That's exactly what you need, isn't it, in Paris-Roubaix? Tenacity is exactly the word, because you need to overcome so much to win. And it was a race which had it all, didn't it? It had crosswinds thrown in there just for good measure. But yeah, an amazing race. And I guess we can only hope that the men can live up to that when they take to the roads tomorrow. Becca, thank you very much for joining me.
Thanks for having me. Great to be here.
And I'm going to let Becca get on, because I know she's actually moving house today, which is a crazy multitasking, which I don't think anyone else would ever attempt. So I'm going to let you go.
That is peak me, isn't it? No problem.
I'll let you get on with that, Becca. But yes, the Cycling Podcast Feminine will be back this week. Actually, we'll be looking over the Cobbled Classics and looking ahead to the Ardennes, which obviously start next week. And of course, the men's Arrivé for there. Paris-Roubaix, if you have any interest in that little race that happens on a Sunday, will be out tomorrow. Join us then.
The Cycling Podcast was created in 2013 by Richard Moore, Daniel Freeb, and Lionel Burney.